SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races. with each break, I run to go pack something else in the suitcase and pick out more shirts and whatever, and ties. Nick Tamaro joins us, and it's been a nightmare trying to connect with you the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been unnecessarily difficult. We talked before. Well, we didn't talk last Friday because you were busy, and then we talked before the Wood Memorial, I think. Yeah, we did. We did. Okay. I didn't have any good opinions. That's why you quickly glossed over it.
No, well, neither did I. I didn't like Pino Rosso at all.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I find myself watching replays of races where I was right all the time, but I don't watch. I think I've watched replays of the 2015 Breeders' Cup zero times. I don't think I've watched any of those races ever again. It is a Breeders' Cup for me that could just be expunged from the record.
There, you'll get those. They're out there.
Yeah. Now, I've watched 2014 replays an awful lot, I will admit.
Well, we remember that wry smile after you hit that try. Well, good opportunity, Nick, just to kind of take stock about where we are ahead of 2 weeks from today, the Oaks, and we'll obviously keep handicapping and keep looking ahead. But first, for you, last week at Keeneland, and I was busy at Hot Springs, but the Grade One Gamble brought together a big crowd. I heard a huge number, actually. Talked to Pete on Wednesday. You were on site, our man North Carolina Tony as well, and so many familiar names. Talk about last week's action at Keeneland.
Yeah, it was a good big crowd for the Grade One Gamble. Grade One Gamble was more or less the original live money tournament that Jim Goodman started back in 2009. And he had 32 people. He mentioned to us when he did the little opening that he had 32 people the first year he did it, and he had 194 this year, 194 entries. So it was a single entry tournament back then. But clearly it's grown quite a bit, and it's kind of become the, I guess you could say, the first major, so to speak, of the handicapping tournament scene for the year. And one of the things that Jim started a year ago was to do a mini tournament on Saturday that's a $400 entry. And so that gives everybody an opportunity to play for a couple of days, which is always nice. And I actually got I hit the fourth race on Saturday and was, I think, in third or fourth. And then the disqualification in the fifth did not go my way. I had a 6-11 exacta box, I had a $20 exacta box, and it was, I think, paying 120, 6-11, and 112, 11-6. So that would have gotten me right into the mix. The winner ended up having a $3 try there, so, no DQ. You can't really find yourself thinking too much about what would have happened if there hadn't been a DQ, but it certainly would have changed the complexion of the tournament quite a bit. So sometimes it happens. I've been fortunate in the past with disqualifications. I didn't think it was a good decision. I promise also when I'm in Travis's booth Derby week not to say anything to the stewards who are right next door. But I didn't think it was a good call. I thought that the bettors were the ones who were punished when you take a horse that won the race and place them fourth, because there might have been a fourth place finisher who got third. So anyway, that's racing. And then on Saturday, had a good opinion in the fifth, which was an off-the-turf race, and got myself up to, I think, 15th place or so. After that, came back in the next race, liked the winner, did not like the second horse, really tried to, to hit a $20 or $30 try and a big exacta there. So I didn't go my way, and then had a bad opinion in the seventh race. So just ended up going the wrong direction, but it was a good fun weekend. I highly recommend to anybody, if you want to get involved in live money tournaments and you're a Keeneland player, then consider going in October, because you're going to get a great seat for contest day itself, and Jim just does. I mean, you can't possibly say enough about Jim. Of all the people who run tournaments, the guys that that really, you know, take it the extra mile are people like Jim and Nate Newby at Santa Anita, because they also play. You know, Jim has I think a 4-time NHC qualifier, so he really gets, you know, what the players want, and it was a really good time. So it was good. The weather, of course, could have been better on Sunday, but you kind of take the good with the bad. So everybody will now look to some of these high-dollar tournaments between Derby and Belmont that I'm sure you touched on with Pete, with the Derby being $12,000 and the Belmont being $10,000, and of course him and Jonathan's new World Horse Players Tour that has an event at Santa Anita for Preakness will draw some interest as well out on the West Coast. So tournaments are certainly alive and kicking, and I'll find my way to play a few more this year, hopefully with a little bit more success.
Well, we'll keep checking in because you're on site and make the rounds, all the big highlights, and of course you'll be in New York a handful of times between now and September.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I will come up for the Belmont, and I will come up. I'll probably come up for the Saratoga tournament now that it's on a Friday and Saturday. So I want to support that as much as possible. It depends on if I go to Del Mar. Del Mar always kills two birds with one stone because it's kind of a vacation and the tournament is fun. So we'll see if that happens. But yeah, I'll keep all my regular spots between now and then. I may play the Derby contest too. I'm not positive yet, but might put together a little group and play that and see if I could have at least two good opinions, because it's only been one each of the last 2 years, and that probably won't do it.
How much is the buy-in this year?
Derby contest, $12,000.
$12,000, so, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's big. And quite honestly, I mean, I have no problem with people knowing that, you know, the almost every single live money tournament I play is with partners. So I don't, you know, I can't. I'm not going to take on $12,000 myself, and it's quite a bit easier to. I basically got a group of three people together, including myself. I always am going to take an equal share to the largest share that anybody else bought in for. And so we, three of us, put money together for the Belmont contest last year. We're still playing off that money. So, you know, it would maybe be a new scenario for us for the Derby to play that as well, and maybe we'd bring in somebody else and, you know, kind of figure things out at that point. So we were actually able to take out the money we put in, still have a little bit of money. So we're still swinging at this point. But of course, you're always one contest away, right? You're one contest away maybe from whacking up $100,000 or from figuring out how much we each have to put in to play the next one on the slate.
Well, appreciate the live look-ins. Let's get some opinions about the end of the prep season, Nick, and where you stand, what your thoughts were about Magnum Moon and those that chased him home. Also some My Boy Jack, and 2 weeks out from Derby Oaks, what are your thoughts?
You know, honestly, I have never been, and I'm sure everybody that has heard me talk about these kind of horses in the past is thinking, oh my God, he's totally selling out. But I've never really been a big, you know, oh, I think this horse is really something special, or he's something different, or this and that. I kind of reached the conclusion that Justify really is just something different, that he's not the kind of horse that we've seen on a regular basis, and they're all strictly running to beat him. So I don't know if ultimately what could be his undoing. You know, maybe it could be an inside post or a less than stellar trip or something like that. But I feel like when you're making a case against Justify, you're doing it on, you know, an argument that really could best be described as, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like it could prove to be kind of spacious. I don't know if you're, I mean, I don't know how it will actually be proven wrong, but, you know, you're basing it on things that you believe could happen, but not anything that you've actually seen. Yes, he's going to face a much bigger field. He's going to have to deal with some adversity that he hasn't had before, but, I mean, this is a supremely talented horse who has really come together very, very quickly, and there's something to be said for that kind of development and that kind of maturation that he's had this quickly. So, I didn't think much of either of the prep wins last weekend, to be perfectly honest. I think Magnum Moon is a really easy toss. I don't see how he'll be competitive in this race. He's slow. He had a very, very, very favorable trip last time. After the first the first quarter, which was respectable, he walked on the lead, and I don't know what the deal is with all the drifting out and stuff. I don't know what Luis Saez is doing either to get these horses to shy away from the rail so much. I don't know if it's him, or I don't know if it was those individual horses, but either way, I don't want horses that are running diagonal lines through the stretch, so I'm not a big fan. I don't honestly want anybody out of the Arkansas Derby. I think it was a running that could have been really something special if Justify had come to face Magna Moon, but with him going to the Santa Anita Derby instead, I think it was kind of Magna Moon's race to lose. And Solomini is a useful horse that probably got a less than ideal trip last time, being so wide, but he seems like the kind of horse that'll make a barely meaningful run and finish seventh in the Derby to me. My Boy Jack is an interesting horse if you believe the pace is going to be really fast. I just have a hard time believing the pace is ever going to be fast in the Derby, you know, really fast. My Boy Jack is a meltdown type horse. So he's sort of a very poor man's version of Exaggerator, in the sense that he's kind of a grinder, and he's got that move, and he'll come firing at you, but he's going to need something really, really wild to set him up. So, you know, if I was having to put together, you know, a 1, 2, 3, 4 now of horses I like in the race, it would be Justify, Audible, and I'd kind of search for the third and fourth. I wouldn't really have a Bolt Doro for sure. Actually, I would have him third, and then it would be wide open at that point. I'd probably be looking for a long shot of some sort. I think Bolt Doro is being underrated at this point, and I see arguments that people are making on social media, like, does it bother you that he hasn't won since September? I couldn't possibly, other than something that had to do with maybe the way they were styling his mane, I couldn't think of something that bothers me less. You know, it means absolutely nothing to me. So, you know, it means nothing. Because of course now we're like a win at all cost culture, right? Like, oh, if you don't win, you suck. You know, God forbid you had the audacity to lose. So that doesn't bother me at all. I likened it last week to Monarcos and Congaree. I don't know if that might be giving him a little bit too much credit, but I thought he ran a very good race last time. I thought he was taken out of his game by the way he had to track Justify closer than he really wanted to. And I feel like in an honestly run race where he's able to get back to what his preferred style is, which is to settle in probably that, you know, third flight in an average pace Derby, even in a hot pace Derby, he's probably going to be somewhere around 5 to 6 lengths off of it, and just be able to make that move around the turn to get into contention. And I think that other than maybe a horse like Justify, who, or even, you know, a horse like, I don't know, like, not Audible, but Magna Moon, if you believe Magna Moon could win, what you're expecting is that he's going to be tracking the pace. He's going to be close, and he's going to get into contention around the 3/8 pole and be there. That's, I think that with Boldoro, you're looking for something similar. He's just going to be a little bit farther back early. So I think that for a horse who I really didn't love coming out of the San Felipe, I actually liked his performance in the Santa Anita Derby quite a bit. So I would have him in the mix as well. And everybody else, I just feel like I'm looking and I'm kind of making a face and trying to convince myself of why I really would want to bet my money on them. So anything can change between few things could change between now and Derby Day, but that's kind of the overall way that I see it.
Have you been, and I generally have the same approach here, Justify and Bolt, I might actually sub Noble Indy, who I keep kind of coming back to as the horse that is out of sight, out of mind, and of the Pletcher horses. I want to see, you know, I want to see how he comes up toward it. And I would say, you know, you say about Solomini, he's got a style that I love for Derby, which is that 24-3, 24-4, 24-2, 24-3, and all of a sudden you look up and, you know, he's in contention at the eighth pole, which is half the battle. The horse that grinds out level fractions, they do well in the Derby. And
He actually has a little bit of a look to me of a Belmont type horse too. So if he
could be. Yep.
You know, if he runs a respectable race in the Derby, then he's probably that one pace type that could really be dangerous in the Derby, in the Belmont. I also think Audible is going to be very dangerous in the Belmont if all things go as planned. But I do agree, and I'm glad you brought up Noble Indy, because he was a horse that I wanted to mention as well. His win is probably the most underrated win by far.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, here was a horse that clearly reacted positively to getting blinkers. He improved by leaps and bounds. He had a very much less than ideal trip pace-wise. And, you know, it's easy to forget how impressive it was that he fought back on the rail and came back and won that race, especially if your inclination is to say, oh, my God, how bad did My Boy Jack hang? You know, and how bad did Lone Sailor hang? I don't know. I'm kind of the opinion that Noble Indy kind of came back and grabbed him right on the wire. So it was a good performance. I think the ironic thing about the ownership on the horses that are in this race is that both Audible and Vino Rosso have a portion of their ownership that also owns a portion of Noble Indy, and Noble Indy would perfectly set the table for both Audible and Vino Rosso. So it's almost one of those situations where it's like, well, we don't want to turn, you know, you would never throw the label of rabbit on it. And Todd Pletcher, of course, would never tell you that he was using a horse as a rabbit, even if it was for connections that had common ownership. But you almost wonder if Noble Indy's like main impact on the race is going to be as some kind of pace factor, because that gives him the best chance of winning, and it also gives the horses that his owners also own the best chance of winning too.
Well, and of course, his stallion has not yet been returned to the United States. So it's if we're gonna add layers of intrigue to that equation of table setting, I suppose. Interesting.
He's a Take Charge Indy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is Take Charge Indy standing?
No one knows. Korea. They're trying to get him home. And of course, they're doing the same thing with poor Posse, who, you know, all you hear about is Antonio Seno, but being held captive. Posse's being held captive in South America.
Oh,
nobody
no.
says a word.
Oh no, that's funny. Yeah, that's not ideal by any means. But yeah, we had a funny conversation at Windstar a couple of years ago. We were getting toured, and it was after the Grade One Gamble, and we were talking about Sydney's Candy, because I was with Jonathan, and he really loved Sydney's Candy, and so of course that just opened it up for me to make fun of him, and for loving these regional California horses that couldn't step up when they traveled, and so the poor Sydney's Candy, of course, has had a horrible stud career, right? And he's banished in this paddock at the back of Windstar, and so I said to Sean, who was touring us, I said, oh, is this like the timeout section? So this is like where kids have been bad and you put them in the corner, you guys throw the bad stallions back here. And he kind of like sort of gave me that wry smile that you referenced earlier and kind of nodded. So hopefully Take Charge Indy comes back, he won't get sent to timeout. He'll at least maybe, if Noble Indy can make him proud, he'll at least get a seat at the table.
Well, let's take a quick shot. Any look at much this weekend? Some kind of far-flung opportunities here and there?
Yeah, a little bit. There's not a couple of bad races at Keeneland, both and Aqueduct. The Elkhorn came up really, really good. I mean, this is,
yeah.
You know, as far as distance horses go, other than Sadler's Joy, you know, these are kind of, and Beach Patrol, this is what you'd expect. So I didn't really know if the field would be this good, but it certainly came up really, really strong. You know, I think the horse to beat in many ways is It's in the Post, who's he's consistent, and he won at Keeneland last year. He actually won over a pretty relatively boggy course. He's a versatile horse that can run on more or less anything. I thought if you wanted interesting prices, it would definitely be beneficial for Bullard's Alley to be at home. He's been a better horse in Kentucky. He's run well at Keeneland before. I think Tim Glyshaw is more comfortable at home too. And I really don't think he ran that poorly at Gulfstream in those three starts. I think his last start was probably a little bit dull, but by that point he needed to just get back home. So I think that he's going to improve, and it'll be an honestly run race with one go all go being in there. It's really cool that Jorge Ricardo is coming to ride some in TM, given that he's a Brazilian, and it's kind of an interesting connection. This is a horse also that in some distance races has run well, and he was a little dull last time in the McDermott, but I think he's another one, given the connections, being back in Kentucky is really going to do him a world of good. So I think you've got some interesting possibilities there from a multi-race perspective, and I think you've also got a good race leading into it, that high-level allowance race where you've got a few real contenders on the inside. One-liner is going to be a pretty solid favorite, I would imagine, given that he's stretching out now to what is a more appropriate distance. But Nygon's Edge ran well last time. Curlin's Vow has improved, albeit on a wet track lately. And you're going to get... you're going to get a little bit of value everywhere else because senior investment is going to take a pretty good bit of money given his Keeneland history and that it's Ken McPeak and so on and so forth. But he feels like a horse who's going to need them to really cook up front, and I don't know if that's going to happen. So good end of the card there. The stakes races at Aqueduct both Saturday and Sunday for three-year-olds on the turf are, they don't have gigantic fields by any means, but they're interesting races. And I thought that the Woodhaven was one where I was interested to see how 50 does going to the turf, and there's plenty of turf pedigree there, and Sand Dancer's a horse that had kind of knocked on the door a little bit at Gulfstream, so those will be somewhat interesting. And then later on, the Stallion Series race has a lot of the same characters we've now seen a few times, and I know it's part of that pick four between Charlestown and Aqueduct, so everybody that wants to get involved in that, those have paid really well, and I think you get a lot of value because you have people maybe outside of their comfort zone from a handicapping perspective, and so they have a tendency to spread a little bit farther.
Well, we're going to look forward, Nick, to the two-week lead-up, and we'll talk again next week. Keep everybody busy for...
Live and in person in 2 weeks.
As always, always a great segment.
See you in the parlay.
To it. Absolutely. Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM, NTAMM, 1215. Let's take a break. Scully next. We'll get Scully's lead-in. He wrote his Kentucky Derby report and looked at seven of the Derby candidates. We'll see his thoughts with the lead-in, with the Derby prep season over. James Scully next. Dunleavy is going to join us as well. We'll talk about Charlestown. We'll get the Charlestown Classic coverage in and much, much more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then Briznet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The Briznet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at Briznet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at Briznet.com/APR. The Briznet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit Briznet.com for all this information and more, and discover why Briznet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Hey folks, Eddie Olchek here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Maryland for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 25 into hour two on this Friday, and obviously with Derby Oaks just 2 weeks away, in fact, 10:30, I think, first, James Scully joins us. I think, James, 10:30 will be first post 2 weeks from today.
That's correct, yeah. 14 days till the Oaks, 15 days till the Derby, and first day at Churchill for the next 2 weeks was this morning. Really brisk, cool morning, but it's supposed to be in the 60s this afternoon and warming up the rest of the week.
Very nice. Well, we will see you. We'll see you this weekend. And in the meantime, the Kentucky Derby report for you, focusing on the end of the prep season and Arkansas Derby and Lexington. Just talked to Nick Tamaro in the wake of the same. Your thoughts for those that haven't seen the Scully Kentucky Derby report yet from a couple days ago.
Yeah, the I basically highlighted, I think, the top seven betting choices in the Derby. I think Justified, Mendelsohn, and Magnum Moon are going to be the top three betting choices. And then Bold D'Oro, Audible, Vino Rosso, and Good Magic. I'm not sure how the betting will shape out on those four, but I do expect that seven to be your top seven in the betting. Magnum Moon solidified his position in the Arkansas Derby. There was no pace in that race, and he drifted out in upper stretch, but I really thought, it looked like he saw something in the infield. They said he was shod from the starting gate that was in the infield, and he was pretty much running straight, late in that race, even though he was about seven or eight paths off the rail. And while I'm a little bit like, not sure what kind of trip he's going to have in the Kentucky Derby, because he's raced up to the close to the pace in all four starts, and a little bit worried, his speed ratings, his first speed numbers are lower than some other top contenders. But I also have been really impressed by how he's finished. And, we've seen other horses, Suicide Sea Pegasus, I'll Have Another, and others that have never been far off the pace and dropped back in the Derby and, made that run. So they just adapted to the circumstances. And definitely a chance Magnum Moon will do the same.
Well, on the wagering side, there's been a lot of that discussion this week. The first two things that people seem to be focusing on, James, are the potential morning line and where the betting shakes out, and then the pace scenario.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how much money comes in on Mendelsohn. I think there's a little bit of a thought process that, he's like 6-1, 8-1 range, but I'm anticipating him be a little bit lower. I expect just his connections and their associates to play him in the American pools and bet him real hard. And I wouldn't be surprised in the, you know, we're looking up at the odds during Derby Day and he's sitting up there at like 9-2 range. And I do expect him eventually to be about 5-1, but I've got him pretty much as the solid second choice. And he's in the same boat with Justify and the others where they're coming off front-running wins. And they might have to change tactics a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what Promises Fulfilled does in the early stages. He's never been headed at the first or second call of any of his races. So those, to me, he's going to be going. They might want to set horses Justify. Mendelsohn might want to set up shop like right behind him as well as Magnum Moon and second, third, fourth, ideally. But, you know, a lot can happen at that start. And there's a lot of horses that want to be right behind the pace.
Your coverage and your reports from here, how will you work your way back through the field in coming weeks?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm looking at it from an exotics like standpoint where, you know, I like to have like a horse, and then it's all about finding the B's and C's essentially beneath them. And, you know, there's like today, yesterday was a good example with one with Sailor. I think he and like My Boy Jack are the two deep closers in the field that have a chance to perhaps, you know, clunk up for like a small piece of it, you know, if it's a real hot pace and the speed comes back to him. I like My Boy Jack a little bit better than Lone Sailor. I was just impressed visually by his Lexington. I know it wasn't a fast race, but after, you know, that trip in the Louisiana Derby where he was so wide on the far turn and just continued to tip out into the stretch, much better effort visually. And, you know, to me, he's definitely one to consider underneath. He's going to be running late.
When you've reflected on Derby successes and think about the one that comes to mind with you is I'll Have Another. How is your betting approach generally? You know, you said you want to key on a horse or two. Explain the process that you've used typically when you know, establishing your approach and. You know, obviously, watching everything that's gone on to this point is a big part of that. But then, you know, being able to distinguish, you know, what tools you can fold in, you know, Brisnet, whether it's late pace, early pace, elements, prime power, all the things that comprise the Brisnet PPs and you know, the other handicapping tools. Go through the method from your standpoint.
Well, I mean, you know, I start with the Brisnet numbers, you know. I mean, they're critical to my handicap, and I've done a lot of speed and pace analysis along those lines. I mean, to me, it's also, you know, I'm like, one question I have in my mind, like surrounding Audible and, you know, even Hofburg is, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of, like, the quality of that race. I mean, I think that the preps, you know, in Southern California – were the toughest preps for the race. So, you know, a horse like Bolt D'Oro, to me, I have some, like, concerns surrounding him, but he's the type that's going to find his way, like, underneath on my tickets because he's just, like, exiting the strongest preps in my mind. So, I mean, that's, like, sort of like the groundwork is, you know, identifying contenders and identifying, like, key races for them because, you know, like with I'll Have Another, who you referenced, I mean, it was my take that year that those races in California were better races, were stronger preps than elsewhere that year. And, you know, he'd won them both. He'd won the Bob Lewis and the Santa Anita Derby. And plus, I got to see him on the track, and his coat looked awesome. He, you know, really looked like he was in fine fettle. And, you know, so everything sort of came together for him on that. One thing about this year's Derby, though, is that I think a lot of times, you know, you do have a smaller pool that people are identifying as wing contenders. And that's why this year's there's so much anticipation surrounding it, because there's so many horses that, like, look like, I mean, everybody knows Justifies, like, the horse to beat. But if he doesn't win the race, I mean, it could really just be up for grabs.
Well, as always, a a fascinating conundrum, a puzzle of however you want to present Derby year to year. The one thing we know is that all of these three-year-olds will go 10 furlongs for the first time. I suppose Mendelsohn, he went 100 yards less, so he's come closest to going 10 furlongs. But we looking forward to all that goes into it. And of course we got to fold in, you know, as the rest of the cards come together. Have you done any Oaks, much at Oaks work?
Yeah.
I look at
the Oaks. That's a race where you're going to have, it looks like a pretty hot pace. I mean, there's, a couple fillies that are, you know, need the lead types that are going to definitely be pushing it from the start. Both top contenders, Monomoy Girl and Midnight Basu, are going to look to set up shop right behind the early leaders, and you got to respect their chances. But I like the progress Eskimo Kisses is showing. If she gets the right pace, I think, you know, she can put forth the run. In her Fairgrounds Oaks race, I mean, she waited until midway on the far turn to even launch her move. I was looking for a step forward in the Ashland. I saw that from her. I really liked the way she cornered that day. And, you know, I think she's got the best chance at upsetting the top two in the Oaks this year.
That's a whole nother element, because, of course, you've got Oaks Derby double to consider. James, before we wrap, anything catch your eye that have you had a chance to look at anything for the weekend?
No, I'm still going to work on some handicapping today on that. You know, just been prepping a little bit for the Derby and Oaks, and like I said, today was my first morning watching the works, and going to take a look at Keeneland, but you know, I'm really focusing on the main event right now.
Excellent. James Scully, everybody, and be sure to go to the Twin Spires blog roll and the Kentucky Derby Report and listen.
All right, thanks, Steve. We'll see you soon.
James, I appreciate it. And we'll keep a close tab on James's approach. He really has had a thoughtful way of getting to Derby, and the one that, yeah, that he was all out in front of I'll Have Another. That, he sniffed him out more than anybody. We'll take time out a little past the bottom of the hour. We've got to get to Dunleavy. Want to get a quick look at the Charlestown Classic. James keeping track there at Chucktown, and the just a group of seven for the big money involved. The rest of that card too is good. Dance to Bristol and all the other stakes that are familiar on the classic card. Take a timeout. Ed DeRosa, Rick Hammerly yet, and Jay Pribman. And Gus. Going to get to Gus today. Back after this at the Races, second half. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America.
Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss, staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous and call the shots. So, see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost.
Back at the races, about 20 to the top of the hour, and Jim Dunleavy joins us. Was with the Jim at Oaklawn last week, and he moves from Oaklawn to Charlestown and the $1.2 million Charlestown Classic. And Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, and it was great to see you at Hot Springs and pitching in there and helping Mary Rampolini. And now you're back on the Mid-Atlantic beat. And, of course, this was a controversial lead-up this year to the Charlestown Classic.
Yes, it was a little bit. It took quite a while to get the Charlestown stakes schedule approved by the West Virginia Racing Commission this year. And at first, the purse of the Classic was denied. And then the governor spoke out in favor of the race, and a special meeting was set up. And at that short meeting, the commission kind of reversed its previous decision and approved the purse of the race with the stipulation that a panel would be formed to review the best way to spend stakes purse money in the future. I don't know where that has gone since, but the end result was that the Charlestown Classic purse was approved at $1.2 million for this year.
The salient follow-up to that, of course, is, was this field the kind of field you wanted to see under those circumstances? And a group of seven with, you know, with some nice horses, diversify certainly. His presence, I think, enhances it. And War Story, of course, Ron Paolucci winning it last year with Imperative, and War Story, you know, with a good third in there. I suppose Uriah St. Louis, whose horse Discreet Lover just always runs hard, and he's an interesting participant. Pletcher likes to win this race, and Fear the Cowboy, another remarkable, frankly, story. Bred by the University of Kentucky, and Efren Loza has taken him all over the country, and he always acquits himself well. It's kind of an interesting agglomeration of talent.
it's a little different kind of race this year in that Accelerate, City of Light, Hedge Fund all went to the Oaklawn Handicap last week. Normally, there's a California presence in this race, as we've seen Game On Dude, Imperative shipped in last year, and all three of those horses went to the Oaklawn Handicap, which made for a terrific race at Oaklawn, disregarding Hedge Fund's tragic start where he jumped in the air and really lost his best chance. But Accelerate and City of Light went on to really run lights out in a terrific effort by both horses. And, you know, City of Light emerges out of that race as, you know, he's already a two-time winner, so, but now he's got that star power around him. So, it is kind of different. It's a grade two race, and there's a grade one winner. That's always a good place to start. That's Diversify, who won the Jockey Club Gold Cup last fall. You always want to see that in your race to hold its grade. I have a lot of respect for the two Laurel Park horses in here, and they're going to be way overlooked. But, you know, that's part of my beat. I've been watching these horses for a long time now. A Fleet Willie, Claudio Gonzalez, the horse with the funny name, who people outside of Maryland and Delaware may never have heard of. And something awesome, Jose Corrales, who is a 7-year-old Adina Springs bred, Stronic stable owned horse who's been based at Woodbine for his career. And they sent him to Jose last fall, and the switch to dirt has turned him into a different horse. I think they're both going to run very well in here. I mean, you've run down a lot of the fields. You know, we have War Story, who was in here last year and was a bit unlucky in the stretch. He finished third, beaten two necks by Imperative and Matt King Cole, and he was between those two in the stretch over a sloppy track and kind of got bounced around a little at the eighth pole, or at least put in tight. I mean, he could easily, with a little better luck, won that race. He's got Javier Castellano up, who's 3-for-5 in this race. He's won the last two editions. He won on Stanford for Todd Fletcher, and he won last year on Imperative, and he won on Kayaxi Electronica a handful of years ago. So it's an interesting race, you know, and you can look at the purse and say, oh, it's not a $1.2 million field. Well, I think you can say that about a lot of races on any given weekend. And what the West Virginia Racing Commission did by pushing back the approval of the race certainly didn't help the racing office attract horses to it either. But I'm kind of pumped about it. And I'm also excited about the undercard here. There are 8 small stakes on the undercard. Some are overnight handicaps even. 4 are West Virginia breds. But there are a number of good matchups in here on the undercard. And I think all in all, it's a very good Charlestown Classic card when you take it from beginning to end.
Jim, one question, and we'll glance at the rest of the slate. Invariably, when you come to this race and the 7-furlong oval, you know, this is a 3-turn mile and an eighth, and not every horse necessarily handles that. And I'm just curious, because you do have, you know, a horse like Diversify that does like to be on the lead. A Fleet Willie is absolutely going to want to be on the lead. Beyond those two, I guess you're to blame, you know, the way Pletcher has approached this historically. You know, you're to blame is inside, so figure Joe Bravo sets up shop behind the speed. I mean, who benefits, do you think, from the bullring style?
Right. 6-furlong Charlestown track, 3 turns. There are 2 speeds in here, as you say, and they're drawn side by side in the 2 outside stalls, Diversify in the 6 and a Fleet Willie in the 7. I think Diversify, the wild card is how it's going to set up with those two at the start. If neither one of them relaxes and they go head to head, well, it doesn't speak well for them later on in the race, obviously. But I really don't see that happening. I think Diversify may be a little quicker than Willie, and I think a Fleet Willie may end up in that stalking trip, you know? And look at the riders on the two. It's you got IRAD, right? One of the top nationally recognized riders on Diversify. And you've got little-known Jomar Torres on a Fleet Willie. But Jomar is very solid. Me and Claudio have had a lot of success together. Jomar is currently third in the Laurel Park standings. If it turns out with Diversify on the lead and the Fleet Willie stalking them and they can slow it down a little bit, they may go around 1-2 the whole trip. A Fleet Willie is going to give Diversify. You know, you look at Diversify's lines, too, and it's all New York except for the Churchill, the Clark Handicap, the Grade 1 race last fall. I mean, so it's obvious that the New York horse is going to get a lot more respect than the Maryland horse. But a Fleet Willie's one of those horses who has just continually gotten better since Claudio claimed him out of a $25,000 maiden claiming win in 2015. And right now at five-year-old gelding, sometimes that's when they reach their peak, five and six. And yep. That's what's happening with this horse. And Claudio finally got him where he's only running him two turns. He knows now that two turns is what a Fleet Willie wants to do. Three, I think, will be fine also. But if you look at his seven races since he returned in August from a five-month break, he's 5-for-7. The five wins are all two turns. The two losses are one turn. And he's been doing things very effortlessly in his races. And I think he's going to be way underestimated in here. Now, you mentioned that maybe You're to Blame takes up a stalking position in here. I think Something Awesome, who went stretched out to 1 1/8 miles in a Laurel Stake last time, just took to the distance, and he's bred to run long. And, you know, the first three starts that since he came to Maryland were all sprints, and he ran well. He won a second-level optional claimer at six. He won a third-level optional claimer at six. He almost he came up a little bit short, a closing third in the Fire Plug at six. Then he won the General George, closed on that snowy, Fritchie General George day when the weather was very tough and the track was off, and got up there. But the stretch out last time I thought was very impressive. It earned him a 100 buyer speed figure too, career top form. And I think he going a longer at this distance is a handier horse than going short, where he may fall back a little too far and then have to work hard to make up that ground. I think going long, he settles into a nice stalking trip here.
Well, you know what? Now you got me excited for this, actually. In addition to the race as a standalone, we should mention that the Naira telecast is going to incorporate it, and you also have got the cross country pick four with New York, and the four race combined opportunity, multi race, multi track wagering. It's the Dance to Bristol, the Charlestown Classic. I had it here a minute ago, and now I've lost it.
And then it's the 8th and 9th at Aqueduct. It's like an allowance race and the New York Stallion Stakes at Aqueduct. So I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a Naira Saturday at the Races, Fox 2 broadcast from 4 to 6 p.m. They're certainly going to show the Charlestown Classic live. I'm not sure about the Dance to Bristol, but they might. The entire card will also be streamed live, free of charge, on DRF.com also. If people are looking to, you know, if you don't have an ADW account or access, go to DRF.com and you can stream the entire Charlestown Classic simulcast feed. So you've got a television presence for the Classic. You've got this cross-country pick four, which is very interesting because the Dance to Bristol, formerly named the Sugar Maple, it's a $100,000 race, fillies and mares, two turns, seven furlongs, and it's deep. I can't make head or tails of it. I mean, this is just a spread race. I mean, Rudy sends in Frosty Margarita. Tom Amos sends up In Spite of You off three Delta Downs wins. In the Navy Now is in very good form for Mike Trombetta and has been freshened since mid-February. The favorite is Todd Fletcher, trained Ascertain, who's coming off a first-level optional win at Gulfstream in February. Kieran McGee has a horse turning back. It's like these seven furlong races at Charlestown are tricky because they're two turns. So are you better off stretching out from one turn, six furlongs, or are you better cutting back from a mile and a 16th, two turns, to this seven furlongs, two turns? So they're a little different to handicap than your normal mile track setup, you know? And then Angel at War, who ran kind of as... This is a Mike Gorham's horse. Very nice claim by him. Ponied up $40,000. Took this horse out of a non-winners of two victory. $40,000 non-winners of two. Won a maiden for $20,000. He took it out of the $40,000 race, and then he won four races in a row. Ran through his conditions. Now he's facing a little tougher. So she hasn't won in her last three, but she ran kind of an odd race on March 35th at Aqueduct. I thought on New York Claiming Championships Day. In the 70,000 extra heat, where she didn't show, she showed her speed from the gate, but then dropped back after like a quarter mile, and it looked like she might be done at that point in the race. That's something that she wasn't going to be competitive the rest of the way, but she was, and she dug in and she finished second, in kind of a surprising effort. She stretches out now, and her speed is going to be more effective at this seven furlongs, two turns, I think. So that's like five deep, I think. I don't know how many horses I named, but they're all in really good form, and I think they look pretty evenly matched. So that cross-country pick four opens up with a real head-scratcher. Then it takes you to Aqueduct for the eighth. Then you go back to the Charlestown Classic, and then you end up on the New York Stallion Stakes. So it's kind of an interesting deal.
Well, it's a nice card too. Lots of other stakes, West Virginia breads as well, and no fields of less than seven, and lots of multi race options, and the Charlestown Classic highlights it obviously, and a 5:36 Eastern post time, and James will be watching your DRF Dunleavy feed, and be watching the races as well, and I appreciate as always the visit.
Right. If you have a minute, let's just take a quick Laurel look. And I think it's something just as...
Oh, good. All right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I really... Marcus Hirsch is handling the Laurel races while I'm handling Charlestown. But, you know, the Tessio's interesting. I mean, I might be Diamond King's biggest cheerleader at this point in time. But it's been a journey. They have Preakness in the back of their mind. I've seen flashes of promise in this horse and think he could be pretty good, even though he really hasn't reached that point yet. He's in the Tessio. Tessio is a win and you're in for the Preakness. If you're Triple Crown nominated, you've got to, if you haven't ponied up the 600 to nominate or the 6,000 at the later deadline, you're then in a supplemental situation. And I don't see any of these horses supplementing for 150,000 to go to the Preakness. Or 200,000 to get into the Derby or any of that. But the winner, if you're Triple Crown nominated, you get a guaranteed fees paid berth in the Preakness, which saves the owner $30,000. It saves you the 15,000 entry fee and the 15,000 starter fee. And John Service and Cassius King stable with Chuck Zachney and the DJ stable with Leonard Green, they have talked about how they would like to proceed to the Preakness with Diamond King. You know, Cassius King originally bought the horse. He was with Butch Reed, had a good two-year-old campaign, transferred to Service. Really wasn't at his best for the swale down in Florida. He had only recently joined a Service's barn, and he'd only worked once, and he's in a much better place now, this horse. But he hasn't raced since February 3rd. John had him ready for the private terms. He spiked a little fever. He's gone in 2 days, but John Service, being his patient trainer, kept him out of that race. So he comes into the mile in an eighth race off a long layoff. He's going farther. It's a tough distance, but, you know, John's horses are always prepared, and I'm very curious to see this horse run tomorrow. On one more note, the wagering sequence at Laurel's a little different tomorrow. They've got an added pick four, an all-stakes pick four that starts on race seven and includes the Dahlia, the Weber City Miss, the Henry Clark and the Tessio. And that's the same race the late pick five is on, which ends on a maiden $25,000 race. So just be aware there's an extra pick four in the sequence tomorrow that starts on race seven. It's all stakes. There's five stakes at Laurel, and there are some interesting horses there. Hawksmoor, grade one caliber mare for Arnaud Delacour, makes her season debut. Leperu is in to ride in the Tessio, and he'll be aboard her in the Dahlia. And she's a very short price, but she's a terrific mare, and it'll be fun to watch her race at Laurel.
You know, you mentioned the tie-in between the Tessio and the Preakness. The Weber City Miss ties into the Black-Eyed Susan, and the filly will get a chance to get into the Susie.
It does, and there's no nomination problem there like there is with the Triple Crown race. Like in the Tessio, I think only five of the 11 entrants are Triple Crown nominated. So really only five of them are in that winning your in situation. And there is a Navy Commander is scratching out of there, which will bring it to 10. He is cross-entered at Charlestown in the Robert Hilton Memorial. I talked to Butch Reed yesterday, and he was certain that's where they were going to go. He still had to confirm it with his owner, but it was like, yeah, that's pretty much where we're going is Charlestown, not Laurel. So your handicapping Navy Commander is going to scratch out of there.
Well, and looking forward. This is a nice card. Always is.
Two nice cards in the Mid-Atlantic
yep.
tomorrow.
It's a
shame they go head-to-head. I wish one of them was next week and one of them was this week, to be honest with you. And
that's a good point.
It seems a little silly to go head-to-head, but... You know that's the way the racetracks.
If it was going to be one or the other, Charlestown would be the one to move because this card for Laurel, I suppose, could have been last week, which would have given you 5 weeks to Preakness Day and Black Eyed Susan Preakness weekend. You'd have to be at least four. You would think you'd want to be 4 or 5 weeks out, from this card.
Makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. What is it? Five? It's. Right, 2 weeks to Derby as of tomorrow, correct?
Right,
and then,
four weeks to
Preakness, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Jim Dunleavy, everybody, DRF Dunleavy, and really a nice, very, very, things are good in the Mid-Atlantic. And, of course, Colonial. By the time we get to 2019, we'll be looking forward to the start of the Colonial season, too.
if you keep expanding the Mid-Atlantic, it's going to go to Florida. So I don't know if I'm ready for that. But, yes, I mean, people in Virginia want their racing back and deserve to have their racing back. And, we'll see how that plays out. But it certainly sounds like it's getting closer to reality. So
absolutely. Jim Dunleavy, everybody. Jim's like a he's like a rook on the board. They slide him over to Oaklawn, back to Charlestown, and then he'll be back toward Monmouth as they get ready to open soon. And keep him busy. We're going to keep busy into hour three. Go to Hammer, and we'll talk about yesterday's moving fundraiser at Clocker's Corner. Adrian Valenzuela and a huge turnout. Just a show of real force rallying around the 21-year-old. Back after this, hour three, Jay Pribman and Gus as well. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine Unlock and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.